I am now going to read to you the first part of chapter 9 of Ajahn Sujin's book on the perfections. Chapter 9, The Perfection of Determination. The commentary to the Basket of Conduct defines the perfection of determination, adhidhāna, as follows, quote, "Determination has the characteristic of determining upon the requisites of enlightenment. Its function is to overcome their opposites. Its manifestation is unshakableness in that task. The requisites of enlightenment are its proximate cause." Unquote. The perfection of determination, adhidhāna parami, is the firm determination to realize the Four Noble Truths, even though one has to go a long way, and even though it will take an endlessly long time to reach that goal. However, if one develops the path with firm determination, one will eventually reach the goal. Determination in this life means determination to develop each kind of kusala with the aim to realize the Four Noble Truths. We should not deviate from this goal by aiming for pleasant objects of gain, honor, praise and well-being, or visible objects, sound, odor, flavor and tangible object, because in that case we accumulate clinging instead of giving up and abandoning. The perfection of determination will lead to detachment from desire for sense objects. If we are infatuated with the sense objects, if we are deluded by them and cling to them, we shall wish to have them again and again, and we shall never be satisfied. Then we shall not be inclined to develop the perfections in order to eradicate defilements. Many different types of citta arise and fall away. Kusala cittas arise, and shortly afterwards akusala cittas arise. Sometimes we have determination for kusala citta, but when akusala citta arises and induces us to give in to akusala, we readily give up kusala and we pursue akusala. This shows that we need firm determination for the eradication of defilements. If we want to realize the Four Noble Truths, we should see the benefit of being unshakable in the development of kusala dhammas and the abandonment of defilements. If we lack the perfection of determination, kusala dhammas cannot develop. Now I wish to speak about the life of the Bodhisattva, during which he developed the highest degree of the perfection of determination, the paramatta parami, ultimate perfection of adhidhāna. Nina places a footnote at this point, which reads, footnote number 2, the 10 perfections can also be classified as 30 paramis, that is to say, 10 basic paramis, 10 intermediate paramis, and 10 ultimate paramis, paramatta parami. That is the footnote. We read in the commentary to the Basket of Conduct, Romans 3:6, Conduct of Wise Temiya, that the Buddha related one of his past lives, quote, "When I was the son of the king of Kasi, I was named Mugapaka, meaning deaf and cripple, but people called me Temiya. My father and mother and other people called me Mugapaka because they considered me dumb and cripple. As the Bodhisattva born in that life, I caused great rapture and joy to the king and the ministers, and therefore I received the name Temiya." Unquote. Thus, he had two names, Temia and Mugapaka because of different reasons. We further on read, quote, "During that life, King Kasiraja ruled in Varanasi. He had 16,000 wives, but not one of them conceived either son or daughter. The citizens were worried, saying, 'Our king has no son to keep up his lineage,' and they begged the king to pray for a son. All those wives worshipped the moon, but they obtained no children. Now his chief queen, Kanda Devi, the daughter of the king of Madas, was leading a virtuous life, and the king asked her also to pray for a son. On the day of the full moon, she observed the Uposatha vows, and while she reflected on her virtuous life, she made an act of truth, saying, 'If I have never transgressed Sila, may this assertion of truth a son born to me. May by this assertion of truth a son be born to me.'" That is what the queen prayed. At that time, the Bodhisatta was conceived in the womb of Queen Kanda Devi. And when the Bodhisatta was born, also 500 young nobles were born in the ministers' houses. The king ordered that these young nobles would be the retinue for the royal prince. He sent 500 wet nurses and 500 princely dresses to the 500 young nobles. Moreover, he arranged for 64 wet nurses to take care of the Bodhisatta. When the young prince was 1 month old, the wet nurses brought him to the king, and the king placed him on his hip. Now, at that time, 4 robbers were brought before him to be sentenced. One of them was sentenced by the king to receive 1,000 strokes from whips barbed with thorns, another to be imprisoned in chains, the third to be smitten with a spear, and the fourth to be impaled. When the Bodhisatta heard the verdict spoken by his father, he became disenchanted, because he was afraid of committing grievous acts which would result in rebirth in hell. The next day, the wet nurses laid him on a bed under a white umbrella, and after a short sleep he opened his eyes and saw the white umbrella. He pondered, "From whence have I come into this palace?" And by his recollection of former lives, he remembered that he had once come from a heavenly plane, and then, while he recollected the life previous to that one, he remembered that he had suffered in the Usada hell. When he recollected his life before that one, he remembered that he had been the king in this very city. The following thoughts occurred to him: "I do not need the kingdom. How can I escape from this house of robbers?" And then a goddess who dwelt in the umbrella, and who had in a previous life been his mother, was seeking his benefit, and she advised him to pretend to be dumb, crippled, and deaf, so that he could escape from becoming the king. From that time on, the Bodhisatta pretended to be dumb, crippled, and deaf. His parents and the wet nurses, when taking into account the formation of the jaws of the dumb, the structure of the ears of the deaf, the hands and the feet of the crippled, noticed that all those characteristics were not to be found in him. They thought that there should be a reason for his behavior. Therefore they started to test the prince by giving him no milk for a whole day. Although he was hungry, he uttered no sound to make known that he wanted milk. His mother thought, "The boy is famished. The wet nurses should give him milk." And she made the wet nurses give him milk. They gave him milk at intervals for a whole year, but they could not discover his weak point. The vet nurses thought that children usually like cakes, dainties, fruits, toys, and different kinds of special food. They gave him all those things so that they could test whether he was really handicapped. But during the 5 years they tested him, they could not discover any weak point. Then the wet nurses thought that children usually are afraid of fire, of a wild elephant, of serpents, of a man brandishing his sword, and therefore they tested the prince with those things. But he did not see any danger in them. The Bodhisattva was unshakable in his resolution, because he thought of the danger of hell. He thought, the danger of hell is more fearful, more fearful. It is 100-fold, 1,000-fold, even 100,000-fold more fearful. The wet nurses who tested him in these ways did not see any weak point in the Bodhisattva. They thought that children usually like to watch mimes, and therefore they arranged for an assembly of mimes. They arranged for players and conches and drums to cause deafening noises, but they could not make the Bodhisattva change his mind. They lighted the lamps in the darkness, or a blaze of fire to light up the darkness. They smeared his whole body with molasses and let him lie down in a place infested with flies. They did not let him bath and made him lie down in his excrements and urine. People were sarcastic towards him. They ridiculed and scolded him. They disapproved of him because he was laying in his own urine and excrement. They lighted pans of blazing hot fire and put these in the bed under him. They used many tricks to test him. But in spite of all this, they could not make the prince change his mind. The wet nurses tested him until he was 16 years old. They considered, saying, when children are 16 years old, no matter whether they are crippled, deaf and dumb, they all delight in what is enjoyable, or they want to see things that are worth seeing. Therefore, we shall arrange for women performing dramas to seduce the prince. Then they bathed him in perfumed water and adorned him like a son of the gods. They invited him to a royal suite full of pleasing things. They filled his inner chamber with flowers, with unguents and garlands, just as a dwelling of the gods. They made the women, who looked as graceful as Apsara goddesses, wait on the prince in order to seduce him and to cause him to take delight in them. However, the Bodhisattva, in his perfect wisdom, stopped his inhalations and exhalations, hoping that the women would not touch his body. When those women could not touch the prince's body, they thought, this boy has a rigid body, and thus he is not a human, he must be a yaka. And then they all returned. His parents could not cause him to change his mind, though they tried him for 16 years with great tests and many smaller ones. They implored him to change his mind many times, saying, Prince Tamia, dear child, your parents know that you are not dumb, because your mouth, ears and legs are not like those of someone who is dumb, deaf and crippled. You had a son your parents were wishing for. Do not destroy us now, but deliver us from the blame of all the kings of Rose Apple Land. Though they entreated him in his way, though they entreated him in this way, the boy pretended not to hear them. Then the king summoned the fortune tellers, who said that the prince's feet, etc., were not like those of someone who was crippled. They said, this boy is not crippled, deaf and dumb. But he is a person of ill luck. If such a person would stay in your palace, three dangers are threatening to your life, to your power, and to the queen. But when he was born, we did not want to cause grief to you. And therefore we said that the prince had all auspicious characteristics. The king, who was afraid of these dangers, gave a command to put the boy in an impropitious chariot, take him out by the back gate and bury him in the charnel ground. When the bodhisattva heard this, he was greatly rejoiced and he thought, the wish I had for a long time will reach fulfillment. But when Queen Kandadevi knew that the king had given a command to bury the prince, she visited the king and asked him as a boon to give the kingdom to the prince. The king said, your son is ill luck. I cannot give him the kingdom. Thereupon the queen said, if you will not give it to him for his whole life, give it to him for 7 years. But the king said, I cannot give it. The queen said, then give it to him for 6 years, for 5, 4, 3, 2, for 1 year. Give it to him for 7 months, for 6, 5, 4, 3, 2 months, 1 month, for half a month, or even for 7 days only. The king then consented. Thereupon, Queen Kandadevi had her son adorned, and the proclamation was made in the city to beat of the drum, with the announcement, this is the reign of Prince Temia. He was seated upon an elephant with a white umbrella held over his head, and he was triumphantly led around the city. When he had returned, he was laid on his royal bed. Queen Kandadevi implored him all night, O Temia, I did not sleep for 16 years. I have wept because of you, my child, so that my eyes have become swollen and my heart is pierced with sorrow. I know that you are not crippled, deaf and dumb. Do not make me utterly destitute. The queen implored the prince day after day for 5 days. Then on the 6th day the king summoned the charioteer Sunanda and said to him, early tomorrow morning you have to take the boy in an unlucky chariot and bury him in the charnel ground. Then fill the whole well up with earth and return. But when the queen heard this, she said to her son, my child, the king of Kasi has given orders that you are to be buried in the charnel ground tomorrow. Tomorrow you will die. And when the bodhisattva heard this, he greatly rejoiced that his 16 years of endeavor had almost come to an end. But his mother's heart was as it were cleft. At the end of that night, in the early morning, the charioteer yoked the chariot and let it remain at the gate. He came to Queen Kandadevi and said, O Queen, be not angry with me. I just follow the king's command. Then he carried the prince and came down from the palace. The queen lamented with a loud cry and collapsed. Then the bodhisattva looked at his mother and thought, when I do not speak, she will die because of her sorrow. and thus I would like to speak. But he refrained from speaking with the thought, if I speak, my efforts of 16 years will have become fruitless. But if I do not speak, it will be to the benefit of myself and my parents. Then the charioteer lifted him into the chariot, and it went a distance of 3 leagues, and there the end of a forest appeared to the charioteer, as if it were a charnel ground. He thought that it was a suitable place, and turning the chariot, he stopped it by the roadside. He took off all the Bodhisattva's ornaments and laid them down. Thereupon, he took a spade and began to dig a hole not far from there. When the charioteer Sunanda was digging the hole, the Bodhisattva thought, "This is my time for effort." He rose up, rubbed his hands and feet, and he thought that he still had strength. He thought that he could come down from the chariot, and so he did. He walked backwards and forwards several times, and thought that he had the strength to go even 100 leagues. He seized the back of the chariot and lifted it up, as if it were a toy cart for children. He reflected, "If the charioteer would want to harm me, I have enough strength to defend myself." The Bodhisattva taught the Dhamma to the charioteer, saying, "You are dependent on me, the son of the king. If you bury me in the forest, you will commit evil. It is as if a person who sits or lies in the shade of a tree will not break the branches, because someone who harms his friend is an evil person. The king is like the tree. I am like the branch. And you, charioteer, are like the traveler who sits in its shades. If you bury me in the forest, you commit an evil deed." When the charioteer heard this, he implored the Bodhisattva to return, because he knew that he was not dumb. The Bodhisattva explained the reason why he did not want to return, and he spoke about his inclination to become a recluse. He explained about his past lives and his fear of the danger of hell. When the charioteer had listened to the Bodhisattva's teaching of the Dhamma, he wanted to apply it and also become a recluse. Thereupon, the Bodhisattva said, "O charioteer, take the chariot back and return after you have paid your debts, because a recluse should not have debts, as is the exhortation of all hermits." Then he sent the charioteer back to the king. The charioteer took the chariot and the ornaments, went to visit the king, and informed him of what happened. The king departed from the city together with his fourfold army, the wet nurses, the citizens, and the villagers, in order to visit the Bodhisattva. The Bodhisattva wanted to become a recluse and sat down on a cloth made of branches. He attained the 8 attainments and the 5 supernatural knowledges, the abhinyas. He sat down in a hut with great delight in his recluseship. The king of Kasi went to see the Bodhisattva and exhorted him to rule over the kingdom. But Prince Tamiya refused this. He taught Dhamma to the king in many different ways, and hence the king came to have a sense of urgency because of the impermanence and the disadvantages of sense pleasures which are depraved. The king became inclined to detachment from them and wanted to become a recluse, together with Queen Kanda Devi and many of the courtiers. They all at the end of life were reborn in the Brahma world. The Buddha said at the end of this story that the goddess who was dwelling in the white umbrella at that time was Upalavanya, that the charioteer was the elder Sariputta, the parents the royal family, the court the Buddhist followers, and the wise Damia, the Buddha himself, the protector of the world. The perfection of determination of the Bodhisatta, which was of the highest degree in that life, is the Adetana Paramata Parami. Unquote. The perfection of determination is firm resolve for Kusala with the aim to develop Panya and to eliminate defilements. However, one may not have accumulated this perfection sufficiently. One may see that Kusala is beneficial, that one should develop and accumulate it, and that one's determination for Kusala should become stronger. In spite of this, it is difficult to be steadfast in one's resolution because of the amount of akusala that has been accumulated. Akusala is the condition for being unstable, not steadfast in the determination to develop kusala. As akusala is eliminated, the perfection of determination will further develop. Someone who studied the Dhamma was reflecting that we are in the cycle of birth and death and have to be reborn again. He found that life is so short and that we have a great deal of akusala, that there is no end to rebirth. He did not want to be reborn. He wanted to be free from the cycle of birth and death. There are conditions for having such thoughts. However, this person did not take an interest in the development of Satipatthana, even though he had listened to the Dhamma and saw the benefit of Satipatthana. This was because he was not firm, not steadfast in his determination to listen to the Dhamma and develop Panya. Thus, there were no conditions for the perfection of determination. We should not be neglectful in our determination for Kusala. Day after day, we think of what appears through eyes, ears, nose, tongue and body sense, and we conceive many different ideas of what we experience. When we listen to the Dhamma, we should contemplate what we hear, and in this way we can gain more understanding. If we often listen, it is a condition for considering the Dhamma time and again. If we accumulate the inclination to listen, there are conditions for contemplating the Dhamma instead of thinking of insignificant things, even if we do not always have the opportunity to listen. This shows us the strengths of accumulations. It reminds us not to be neglectful with regard to the perfection of determination. The Dhamma as taught by the Buddha is of immense benefit to all of us. We should contemplate the Dhamma in all details. If we wish to develop Panya and all the different ways of Kusala, we should not neglect knowing and understanding our own akusala. Otherwise, we cannot accumulate the perfections of determination and of truthfulness. The perfection of determination is the steadfast resolution to develop kusala with the aim to eradicate defilements, because one sees the danger and disadvantage of akusala. If someone does not know himself as he really is, and if he believes himself to be superior to many others, he is attached to the good qualities he erroneously pretends to have. We are full of all kinds of akusala, No matter whether we are eating, enjoying ourselves, or performing our tasks in daily life. If we do not know ourselves as we really are, and if we take ourselves for a righteous person who does not need to develop akusala, we do not notice that akusala is guiding us so that we shall be inclined to more akusala. When we develop the perfection of determination, the firm resolution to develop panya through the study and practice of the Dhamma, so that defilements can be completely eradicated, we also need the perfection of truthfulness. This means that we should be sincere and straightforward in our determination. If we do not develop the perfection of truthfulness, we shall vacillate and be defeated by akusala. We can see that we need a refined and detailed understanding of our different chittas for the development of kusala. We should not be neglectful with regard to this. This is the end of part 1 of chapter 9 of Ajahn Sutjen's book on the perfections, chapter 9, the perfection of determination. I am now going to read the second part of chapter 9 of Ajahn Sutjen's book on the perfections. The second part of chapter 9, the perfection of determination. We read in the commentary to the Basket of Conduct about four dhammas which are firm foundation, adhidhana dhammas, connected with the ten perfections. They are truthfulness, sakka, relinquishment, chaga, calm or peace, upasama, and panya. These four firm foundations go together with all the other perfections. The foundation of truthfulness, sakka, is steadfastness in truthfulness. We can verify for ourselves to what extent we are stable in truthfulness and sincerity. One may realize that one is not steadfast in truthfulness. We should have a refined knowledge of ourselves, and see the disadvantage of action and speech that is not truthful. Even with regard to insignificant matters, we should know when we deviate from the truth. At such moments, we are overcome by the strength of the defilements which we have accumulated. If we consider and notice our akusala, we can see the disadvantage of all the akusala we have accumulated, and which is the condition for our unwholesome conduct. We can see the disadvantage of our lack of truthfulness, and hence we can become more steadfast in truthfulness. A person who is without defilements will not tell a lie, and his actions will be in accordance with his thoughts and speech. He is firmly established in truthfulness. Someone who is not steadfast in truthfulness does not act in accordance with his speech because of the strength of his defilements. And this is the condition for citta to be unstable in truthfulness. Some people think that it is just not important to keep one's appointments. Here we see that the accumulation of akusala is a condition for not being truthful in fulfilling what one promised. When people do not see the importance of truthfulness in speech, it is a condition for not seeking the truth, which also includes the truth of the noble ones, the Aryans. As regards the observance of truthfulness in speech, even small children can notice whether someone acts in accordance with his words. When they are grown up, they abhor all the more eloquence that is deceptive, speech that is not truthful, that is not the speech of the noble ones. When someone maintains truthfulness in speech that does not deviate from the truth, he will continue to be steadfast in every respect, even when he is in danger of life. This is the resolve for truthfulness, Sakka Ditana. We should be firmly established in truthfulness, so that we shall reach the further shore, which is Nibbana. The second foundation, Dhamma, is the determination for relinquishment, Tyaga, the relinquishment of all defilements. Relinquishment is not only the giving away of material things for the benefit and happiness of others, such as acts of generosity, dana, but it is also the relinquishment of defilements, and this is to the benefit of oneself. When we give away material things to others, we should also be intent on the relinquishment of our defilements. We should consider whether our action and speech are motivated by kusala chittas. We should not give with the expectation to receive something in return. Clinging, loba, is the opposite, the enemy of each one of the perfections. When we have loba, when we desire to gain something, or when we expect something in return for our good deed, this is opposed to the development of the perfections. Therefore, we should consider in which way we shall give, so that there is determination for relinquishment, and so that defilements can be eradicated. When we give, we should not expect anything in return. And moreover, we should not think of giving as being tedious. We should not give without cheerfulness and generosity. We should give wholeheartedly. We need to have a subtle and detailed knowledge of our chittas so that all defilements can eventually be eliminated. When we see someone else's generosity, we can rejoice in his good deed, and we can feel enthusiasm about it. We should remember that also forgiving is a kind of dana, because we wish someone else to be free from any adversity or danger. Thus, generosity is not merely the giving of material gifts. There can be purity of citta when, by our acts of generosity, we are intent on giving support to the other person so that he is free from harm. We may be able to rejoice in giving and also abandon our own defilements at such moments. We read in the commentary to the Basket of Conduct that the Bodhisattva needed to have a strong wish, a strong yearning to become the Sammasambuddha. We read in the miscellaneous sayings, quote, strong desire, chandata, wholesome desire, the wish for accomplishment. One possessed of the aforesaid qualities must have strong desire, yearning, and longing to practice the qualities issuing in the Buddhahood. Only then does his aspiration succeed, not otherwise. Unquote. The following similes illustrate the magnitude of the desire required. If he were to hear, quote, he alone can attain Buddhahood who can cross a whole world system filled with water and reach the further shore by the bare strength of his arms, unquote. He would not deem that difficult to do, but would be filled with desire for the task and would not shrink away. If he were to hear, quote, he alone can attain Buddhahood who can tread across a whole world system filled with flameless, smokeless, red-hot coals, cross out and reach the otherwise, unquote, etc., he would not deem that difficult too. He does not become disheartened. He does not show dislike, not even slightly, when he hears, quote, "He alone can attain Buddhahood who can cross a whole world system filled with water and reach the further shore by the bare strength of his arms," unquote. And this is an occasion for joy and for endeavor to attain Buddhahood. He has to cross a whole world system. There is not only this world he has to cross. He has to cross a whole world system. We read, quote, if he were to hear, quote, "He alone can attain Buddhahood who can cut through a whole world system that has become a jungle of thorny creepers covered by the solid thicket of bamboo, cross out and reach the other side," etc. If he were to hear, "Buddhahood can only be attained after being tortured in hell for four incalculables and 100,000 aeons," he would not deem that difficult to do, but he would be filled with desire for the task and would not shrink away. Such is the magnitude of the desire required. Unquote. The Bodhisattva thought that he could achieve this, but his determination was not yet firm enough. He had to continue to accumulate keen and refined panya so that his noble qualities could reach accomplishment. When he had visited the Sammasambuddha and his excellent qualities had become firmly established, he could begin to make the resolution to accumulate perfections. We can see that it is extremely difficult to accumulate the perfections which lead to the attainment of the incomparable awakening wisdom of the Buddha. He penetrated the truths of the realities that are arising and falling away at the present moment, so that akusala could be completely eradicated and so that he could attain Buddhahood. The person who has the supreme aspiration to become a Sammasambuddha should have 8 qualifications: the human state, the male sex, the cause, which are the necessary supporting conditions, the sight of the teacher, the going forth, the achievement of noble qualities, extreme dedication and strong desire. As regards the first qualification, the human state, if he is not a human, his aspiration will not succeed. As to the second qualification, the male sex, a woman cannot become a Buddha. The third qualification is the cause, hetu, and this means that in the life when he aspires to be the Sammasambuddha, he must be endowed with the necessary supporting conditions. As to the fourth qualification, the sight of the master, he must be in the presence of a Sammasambuddha. His aspiration will only succeed when it is made in the presence of a living Buddha, not after the exalted one has finally passed away. His aspiration will not succeed when it is made at the foot of the Bodhi tree, before a shrine, in front of an image, in the presence of Pacheka Buddhas, silent Buddhas, or the Buddha's disciples. The aspiration only succeeds when made in the presence of a Buddha. When he has not met a Buddha in person, the power that is necessary to confirm his dedication is lacking. As to the fifth qualification, the going forth, he must have gone forth into the homeless state, either as an ascetic or as a bhikkhu who believes in the doctrine of Kamma and its appropriate result. His aspiration does not succeed when he lives as a layman. Also, at the time he makes his resolution to become a Sammasambuddha, he should have gone forth, because a monk is stronger in his determination than a layman. As to the sixth qualification, the achievement of noble qualities, we read in the commentary to the Basket of Conduct, quote, "The achievement of noble qualities, guna sampatti, the achievement of such noble qualities as the direct knowledges, abhinya, etc. For the aspiration only succeeds when made by one who has gone forth and gained the eight meditative attainments, samapatti, and the five mundane types of direct knowledge. It does not succeed for one devoid of these qualities. Why? Because one devoid of them is incapable of investigating the paramis. It is because he possesses the necessary supporting conditions and the direct knowledges that the great man, after he has made the aspiration, is able to investigate the paramis by himself." Unquote. As to the seventh qualification, extreme dedication, we read, quote, "Extreme dedication, adhikara, is extreme devotion. The aspiration only succeeds for one endowed with the aforesaid qualities who at the time has such strong devotion for the Buddhas that he is prepared to relinquish his very life for them." Unquote. During the Bodhisattva's life as Sumedha, people were clearing the way for the Buddha Dipankara, but since they were not yet ready, Sumedha threw himself on the road so that the Buddha would tread on him. As to the eighth qualification, we read, quote, "Strong desire, chandata, is wholesome desire, the wish for accomplishment. One possessed of the foresight qualities must have strong desire, yearning, and longing to practice the qualities issuing in the Buddhahood. Only then does his aspiration succeed, not otherwise." Unquote. This shows us the Buddha's great compassion. Due to his great compassion, we still have the opportunity to listen to the Dhamma. We read further on about the aspiration of the Bodhisattva, who is endowed with these eight factors. Quote, "Its characteristic is rightly resolving to attain the supreme enlightenment. Its function is to yearn, 'Oh, may I awaken to the supreme perfect enlightenment and bring well-being and happiness to all beings.' It is manifest as the root cause for the requisites of enlightenment. Its proximate cause is great compassion, or the achievement of the necessary supporting conditions. Since it has as its object the inconceivable plane of the Buddhas and the welfare of the whole immeasurable world of beings, it should be seen as the loftiest, most sublime and exalted distinction of merit, endowed with immeasurable potency, the root cause of all the qualities issuing in Buddhahood. Simultaneous with its arising, the great man enters upon the practice of the vehicle to great enlightenment, Mahabodhiyana Patipatti. He becomes fixed in his destiny, irreversible, and therefore properly gains the designation Bodhisattva. His mind becomes fully devoted to the supreme enlightenment in its completeness, and his capacity to fulfill the training in the requisites of enlightenment becomes established." Unquote. Here again, we see the Buddha's great compassion for all of us. We do not have to cross the world systems that are extremely hot, or that are a jungle of thorny creepers, or to accumulate the perfections for as long as an incalculable period, at 100,000 aeons. The Buddha, whose excellent qualities are incomparable, extended his great compassion to us. He became a Sammasambuddha so that we could gain the benefit of the Dhamma he taught to all people. He taught the Dhamma so that we can investigate and that so that we can consider it, so that panya can arise that leads to the eradication of our defilements and the realization of the Four Noble Truths, and so that we can become true disciples. When we see the immense benefit of the Dhamma the Buddha taught because of his great compassion, we become humble and respectful. We become people who are easily instructed, that is, open-minded to the Dhamma, and in this way our defilements can gradually be eliminated. The determination for relinquishment, chaga, pertains to the abandoning of defilements. It pertains to sila, our conduct through body and speech in daily life. We should investigate whether we already eliminated some of our wrong conduct through body and speech, or whether our conduct is still as it used to be, although we have listened to the Dhamma. The abandonment of defilements which pertains to our conduct, to sila, is the condition for heedfulness in action and speech. It is the cause of excellent qualities. We can notice this in someone who has pleasing manners, who is gentle and does not show anger. He does not cause uneasiness in others by a cross and fierce facial expression and harsh manners. Heedfulness in conduct is to be applied in daily life. When kusala citta arises, our behavior changes. Heedfulness in speech means that we have to give up wrong speech. Some people are straightforward, but this does not mean that they should speak disagreeable words. People who have accumulated straightforwardness may neglect heedfulness in speech and the elimination of defilements. When they develop the kusala kamma, which is the straightening of one's views, dittuju kamma, they have right view which knows when there is kusala that is to be developed and when there is akusala that is to be abandoned. The straightening of one's views can be accumulated so that it becomes one's nature. If we want to relinquish defilements, if we have determination for relinquishment, chakka ditana, with regard to sila, our conduct in action and speech, we have to guard the faculties of eyes, ears, nose, tongue, body and mind door in daily life. Kusala citta is completely different from akusala citta. When akusala citta arises, the faculties of the senses and the mind door are involved with akusala, which is not beautiful. Whereas when kusala citta arises, the faculties are well guarded. They are involved with kusala, which is beautiful. When the eye door is not well guarded, this will result in seeing wrongly and understanding wrongly, and hence there will be more trouble and disturbance in our life. We can also see in daily life the consequences of not being heedful as to the faculty of the ear. We cannot avoid hearing senseless words very often, but when we are heedful as to the faculty of the ear, we just do not pay attention to such words. We should know for ourselves when sati sampajanya arises, which is heedful, or when we are not heedful. There can also be heedfulness with regard to the faculty of the nose. when we are not infatuated with enticing others, we do not cling to them or strive to experience them, and we are not disturbed by them. Some people cling to the fragrance of flowers, and if they try to experience ever more of such others, it leads to distress. When one has developed heedfulness of the sense faculties, all anxiety will gradually decrease. When we are heedful with regard to the body sense, we shall not be meddlesome, jesting, ridiculing others, and be reckless in conduct. We shall not molest or harm others. When we are heedful with regard to the mind, we are not worried and preoccupied. We do not think about things that make us unhappy. Some people seem to be happy in appearance, but in reality they may be worried all the time. If they would know that at such moments there are akusala cittas, they would not give in to their worries and make themselves unhappy. They would not think of matters that would cause them to be angry with others, that would cause them to be jealous or to have conceit. If they could consider themselves a dust rag, they would be able to guard the faculties of the eyes, the ears, the nose, the tongue, and the body sense, and they would be able to abandon defilements. This is the determination for relinquishment. When we give things away for the benefit and happiness of someone else, but neglect to be intent on the eradication of defilements at such moments, the determination to eradicate them is just simply not yet firm enough. It is difficult to reach the further shore if we do not have firm determination with regard to the four foundations dhammas. The four foundation dhammas, adhitana dhammas of truthfulness, relinquishment, calm, and panya. If someone sees the benefit of the firm determination for relinquishment, chaka dhitana, and if he has eliminated defilements, he also has the firm determination for calm, upasama dhitana. He has calm, that is, freedom of defilements. This is freedom of involvement with visible object, sound, other, flavor, tangible object, and this leads to being undisturbed by them. This leads also to the development of the perfection of renunciation, nekama parami, departing from sense pleasures. Even someone who is a lay follower may gradually abandon clinging to the sense objects and to the married state. He may be a lay follower who was not married because he sees the disadvantage of the strong bond of family life, which sometimes is a burden. Thus, he sees the benefit of calm and becomes firmly established in the inclination to calm, and this is the foundation dhamma of calm. When someone is firmly established in the foundation dhamma of calm, it is conditioned by the foundation dhamma of panya. Panya dhitana is the fourth foundation dhamma. As we have seen, there are four firm foundations. Adhitana dhammas, determination of truthfulness, sakka, of relinquishment, chaga, of calm or peace, upasama, and of panya. Panya can be accumulated by listening to the Dhamma, by considering it and testing its meaning, for instance by asking questions. In this we can verify what is kusala and what is akusala, what is wrong, what is right, and we can understand what karma is and what its result is. When we listen to the Dhamma, we can investigate the true nature of realities that are cause and that are result. We should use all opportunities we have for listening to the Dhamma during this lifespan. Someone may be negligent in listening to the Dhamma, and he may think that by listening once or only a few times, he can be freed from the cycle of birth and death. But then his determination is not yet firm enough. He should further develop the foundation Dhamma of Panya, and in this way, the perfection of determination will become accomplished. The perfection of determination is an essential condition for the perfection of Panya that leads to reaching the further shore, that is, the realization of Nibbana. This is the end of chapter 9 of Ajahn Sujin's book on the perfections, chapter 9, the perfection of determination.